Welcome to Radio Who, What, Why. I'm Jeff Shechtman. We've talked several times over the years, most recently with former U.S. Senator Bob Graham, about the 28 redacted pages of the Senate Intel Report on 9/11. Those 28 pages finally saw the light of day last summer, and one of the leaders of the effort to get those pages released is our guest today, Brian McClinchy. Now McClinchy is engaged in a new effort to help a group of 9/11 families, survivors, and veterans who were in many ways co-opted and traveled to Washington at the expense of a conservative lobbying firm to lobby against the law enabling suits against the government of Saudi Arabia. Here to explain all of this, it is my pleasure to be joined by the head of 28pages.org, Brian McClinchy. Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Before we talk about the current battle that's going on, talk a little bit about your efforts with respect to getting these 28 pages released and how you got involved in that in the first place.
Yes, I got involved by seeing video of a press conference on Capitol Hill that was being conducted by the legislators who were leading the effort to get those 28 pages declassified, the Walter Jones, Stephen Lynch, and Thomas Massie. It was in particular the comments of Thomas Massie, a legislator whom I'd already respected, that grabbed my attention. And I was intrigued. And for me, it was an issue of foreign policy transparency and an opportunity perhaps to expose hypocrisy in the narrative and the execution of the war on terror. And so I'm a writer by trade, freelance copywriter. I decided to create a website to kind of fill a niche that was needed in that movement. You had legislative leadership, but I wanted to create a site that would help facilitate activism by individual citizens and also provide reliable information, in-depth reporting on the issue to help nudge that movement along.
And ultimately, last summer, those 28 pages were released. They were still redacted somewhat. Talk a little bit about what you felt was accomplished by that.
It did. As you say, there are probably a cumulative 3 pages worth of paragraphs that are still redacted. However, those 28 pages revealed some new, important new things. And most of them, what is most striking about the 28 pages is how frequently the name Prince Bandar comes up in those 28 pages. And Bandar was the ambassador to the United States and a close friend of the Bush, George W. Bush family and the entire Bush family, really. And his name comes up time and again, and it was revealed in the 28 pages that he made direct cash payments to a man in Southern California, Osama Basnan, who was identified in the 28 pages as an extremist who hosted a party for the blind sheikh who helped mastermind the World Trade Center bombing, who was a devotee of Osama bin Laden, and most importantly, was said to have bragged about how much assistance he personally provided to 2 of the 9/11 hijackers that crashed the aircraft into the Pentagon.
Talk a little bit about the reaction, as you understand it, from families and survivors to what was in these 28 pages.
I think they felt it was a very important step forward in peeling back what has been a veil that the government has continued to put over Saudi links to the 9/11 attacks. I think out of the interest of preserving that U.S.-Saudi relationship and shielding Saudi Arabia from scrutiny. Recently, as far as the significance, the 9/11 family's lawsuit was resumed under JASTA, which we'll probably talk about in a minute. Right. The updated complaint in that cites the 28 pages as new evidence as they're making their case.
And to explain to our listeners who don't know what JASTA is.
You bet. JASTA is the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, and it is a law that was years in the making, and last spring had a significant revision to address concerns that had been brought up, and then it was passed unanimously by both houses, unanimous consent, in last summer, and then President Obama vetoed it, and then it was the only override of his entire tenure in office. And so it became enacted in late September. And what it does is it updates the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, which addresses the circumstances under which individual U.S. citizens can sue foreign governments. And it updated that in such a way that would allow the 9/11 families to proceed with their lawsuit, naming Saudi Arabia as a defendant for its links to the attacks and to the hijackers and so forth. And it's not specifically about 9/11. Saudi Arabia is not mentioned anywhere in JASTA in that legislation. So it's an ongoing power, you know, and clarification that citizens for acts of terror conducted on U.S. soil, that U.S. citizens can sue foreign governments that they believe to be sponsored that act.
And explain what the argument was, why President Obama at the time vetoed it.
The arguments against it, you know, frankly, I find disingenuous. One of the principal arguments is that this would somehow jeopardize individual U.S. military service members and individual officials. They say that if the big question is, okay, now that the United States has passed this law, they say, what if everybody does? What if other countries adopt their own version of JASTA, enabling their citizens to sue, let's say, the United States for alleged sponsorship of terror, so forth? I mean, that's a question, you know, about whether they would do that. Unfortunately, most of the op-ed pieces and so forth that are being sponsored by Saudi lobbyists and others, and an argument that President Obama used himself in a town hall speaking to the military, they try to say that if other countries pass laws like JASTA, that individual U.S. military service members and officials would find themselves sued in foreign courts. Well, as I noted earlier, JASTA doesn't authorize suits against individuals in other countries. It only governments. That was underscored by the recent filing that I just referred to in the 9/11 suit. Under JASTA, they updated their complaint in the court process, and there are hundreds of pages of plaintiffs, the 9/11 families and victims and so forth, and one defendant, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, not an individual.
Tell us a little bit about Saudi Arabia's efforts to try and get this law overturned, originally to prevent it from being passed and then to try and get it overturned.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia has one of the most formidable lobbying operations probably in our entire country. Many, many firms and being paid millions and millions of dollars across the board. They, in the run-up, while JASTA was in the works and in the going through the legislative process, you know, they were fully engaged in trying to thwart it. And then when it was enacted over President Obama's veto, they kicked into overdrive. You know, it was not game over for them. They then engaged many, many more firms to now try to go back and water it down, to amend it, change it, repeal it, you know, whatever they can do to, you know, put those barriers back in place between the 9/11 families and the courtroom.
And to what extent were they successful? Were these efforts on the part of Saudi Arabia successful in trying to really create pressure to overturn this?
I don't think they've been very successful at all, just based on, you know, the observed action on Capitol Hill. The two principal people in the legislature who are leading the effort to weaken this law, they would say enhance it or correct it, but to weaken it, are Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And you know, those two in November and December, they made some floor speeches talking about the need to change this. They talked about, they offered again the same flawed arguments about jeopardy to military service members or drone attacks, that kind of thing. But there's been no real legislative action. They never actually, to my knowledge, that we put forward an actual amendment. And so at this point, you know, I don't think there's been much momentum at all in that other direction.
And talk a little bit about the veterans that were brought to Washington to engage in this lobbying effort, veterans who were arguably misled as to what they were coming to Washington for and who was paying for it.
Yes, this is the most fascinating part of this story, is that, you know, so aggressive was this operation that Saudi Arabia and Corvus Corvus MSL Group, which is its main, I believe it is its main flagship lobbying and PR firm managing its affairs and reputation around the world. They engaged Corvus, who in turn began a program by which they would recruit veterans to oppose JASTA based on that argument that, hey, if other countries pass laws like JASTA, individual military service members will be sued in foreign courts. We can't have that. That was the principal argument that they used. And so they attracted veterans to this effort, and then they had a program by which they were inviting veterans to travel to Washington, all expenses paid, to lobby for this alongside fellow veterans and for the betterment of military service members and veterans. Now, what I was able to discover through my reporting, I contacted some veterans who had actually made those trips to Washington, D.C., and the fact that they were making trips was first reported by Daily Caller. Then the question became, do these people know who's behind this? And I contacted some veterans and kind of hit the jackpot in that they said, no, we did not know that that this was the case until we got there and an intoxicated organizer of the event spilled the beans and said, yes, the kingdom's paying for it. And they were outraged. These were the first three that I interviewed were Marine veterans. Two of them are brothers, and a couple of them said, we enlisted because of 9/11. And to find out that we had been unwittingly advancing the interest and the agenda of the government that's been accused of helping to facilitate that attack, you can imagine how that would make them feel. And there were initially three, and then four more veterans from that operation came forward, which, by the way, was being conducted out of the Trump International Hotel. And now more veterans are continuing to come forward with other organizations.
What is your sense of how this is playing out now, and what's next in this battle?
Well, with JASTA, the law of the land, it's kind of a question of, it's a matter of playing defense for those 9/11 families to keep that law in the books. Right now, it's been pretty quiet. Those lobbying trips, and to give you a sense of the budget, we're talking under that Corvus operation, somewhere around seven trips, and we're talking about upwards of 40 and 50 veterans on several of those trips, staying at the Trump International Hotel with a meals provided, open bars in the evening at the hotel that is known for its the most expensive drinks in all of Washington. So, a big budget operation.
What is the attitude of the current administration towards this?
Well, when JASTA was kind of at that final threshold of being passed, then-candidate Trump was asked for his opinion on it, and he slammed President Obama for vetoing it. As we've observed, though, President Trump is not known for his consistency of beliefs and positions. And so I'd say there's a great cause for concern among people who watch this issue, given the fact that the Trump administration appears to be growing extremely cozy with the Saudi Arabian government. And a couple examples of that are restoring arms sales, specific types of weapons that had been restricted under the Obama administration because of their misuse in Yemen, and aggressively supporting and talking about amping up the level of support that the U.S. government's providing for that war in Yemen. I think that signals that there's reason to be very wary of the Trump administration on this issue.
How much litigation has been brought under JASTA up to this point?
Many litigants have come forward, and it's a very complex case. And they're all combined under the heading of this case called In Re, these terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001, which... there are a number of firms in that, each representing, groups of plaintiffs, families, and so forth, and also insurers, who covered damage inflicted by those attacks. And so these cases represent many, many clients, and And now you do have additional people filing complaints now and joining the case as it has renewed momentum.
And tell us a little bit about your continuing efforts with 28pages.org and what's the story that you want to keep out there and what you hope to accomplish at this point?
The main theme that I've been reporting on recently is this Saudi lobbying. And it's funny because at the beginning of the year, I made an announcement on the website that I would be widening the scope of what I was covering there, broader scrutiny of the war on terror. I only got one article into that until this Saudi lobbying story bubbled up. And so now, in the absence of the big media covering this scandal, I'm continuing to try to shed light on it and bring attention to it. Importantly, a few weeks ago, a group of 9/11 families and survivors filed a complaint with the Department of Justice alleging broad misconduct by lobbyists for Saudi Arabia, including this failure to disclose the Saudi sponsorship of these trips and basically bringing people to Washington on false pretenses.
Why do you think there's been so little mainstream coverage of this issue?
That's a great question. I really don't know quite what to say. I was quite shocked. I mean, this story, at a time when there's a lot of other coverage about alleged interference by foreign governments in our political processes and so forth. Here you've got one that's just extremely well documented with a lot of firsthand witnesses, veterans who are being victimized and made into unwitting pawns of a foreign government. And this deception extends even to members of Congress. The veterans were told in that Trump Hotel operation, they were told, if anyone asks who brought you here, just tell them you're concerned veterans here on your own. And for this giant budget operation, they were missing something that's a part of any lobbying operation, and that is leave behind material. If you and I were going to be lobbying City Hall about any mundane little topic, we would leave behind a leaflet or a flyer or something to kind of reinforce our position and explain what we were seeking. This multi-million dollar operation didn't have that. And I'll tell you why is that any informational material that's left behind as part of a foreign government-driven lobbying operation, it's a requirement that you have to have a conspicuous disclosure of who sponsored it. So really this, what I'm saying is that this deception carried over to members of Congress that there was this charade that was going on where they wanted Congress to have the impression that it was individual veterans who were sincerely concerned about this issue, and the members of Congress weren't being told that they were there essentially on behalf, unwittingly, they were acting on behalf of a foreign power. And the Foreign Agents Registration Act passed in the 30s, that's what that's all about. It doesn't restrict anybody's speech, but it does call for transparency so everybody knows above board that that this is a foreign power that's trying to affect policy in the United States.
Are there any veterans organizations that have gotten involved in this issue?
There are none that have gotten involved on the good side. Some have been potentially misused on the other side. One of the chief organizers of the Corvus operation that operated out of the Trump Hotel used to be the second in command of the Military Order of the Purple Hearts. However, the Military Order of the Purple Hearts says that they have nothing to do with it. That was his own activity. However, there are some veterans seem to give the indication that they were led to believe that there was an endorsement from that organization, but their spokesperson was very clear in saying that that was his activities alone.
Has there been any lessening of the efforts on the part of the Saudi lobbying firms of late?
It appears that all these trips have halted, that they stopped. The most recent one that I'm aware of was in early March. Whether they had already run their course or budget or that they were intending to do or whether the coverage of this was the cause of that, I don't know. But for now, it seems that they're over. And I do know word is getting around Capitol Hill, at least in some quarters, that these were about the Saudi operation. So I think they're going to be very wary of anybody doing it again.
Brian McClinchy, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
It was great to be with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening and joining us here on Radio Who, What, Why. I hope you join us next week for another Radio Who, What, Why podcast. I'm Jeff Shekman. If you like this podcast, please feel free to share and help others find it by rating and reviewing it on iTunes. You can also support this podcast and all the work we do by going to whowhatwhy.org/donate.